From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we'll take a walk on the paranormal side. Here's what's happening. Worldwide, dealing with an explosion of new coronavirus infections likely will delay the world's recovery from this deadly crisis, according to health authorities. The number of COVID-19 cases reported around the world in the last 2 weeks was higher than the total of confirmed infections in the first 6 months of the pandemic, according to the World Health Organization. India and Brazil, which are going through their worst day since the pandemic began, account for more than half of last week's cases all by themselves. About 44% of older millennials born between 1981 and 1988 report having been diagnosed with at least one chronic health condition, according to a recent survey conducted by the Harris Poll. They make it among over 4,000 U.S. adults, about 830 of them between the ages of 33 and 40. A top Australian general is warning there is a high likelihood of war with China, according to a leaked briefing to troops. The Major General, Adam Findlay, who has since stepped down from his post but still advises the Australian Defence Force, reportedly gave this confidential briefing to Australia's Special Forces soldiers last year. I thought we'd bring in Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, to get his reaction to the story. What do you think he's talking about, John? Australia going to war with China or all of us?
Well, I mean, I think he's talking about Australia being sucked into a war with China in the Taiwan Strait. And, you know, the Chinese have stepped up their, you know, their reconnaissance, aggression, flying bombers and, you know, all kinds of activity in the, you know, that's the body of water between Taiwan and the main and mainland China. The problem is right now, George, we have a president and we have a secretary of state that is threatening China, sanctioning China and accusing them on a daily basis of committing genocide in the western province against Muslim Uyghurs, of eviscerating any pro-democracy movement, whatever that would exist in Hong Kong, and you know the and then having these intimidations of Taiwan. Well, right now the G7 summit is going on in London, and guess what? Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, and Dominique Raab, the Foreign Secretary of Britain, they're creating at the G7, which is highly inappropriate, a coalition of willing participants, including Australia and Japan, and trying to get countries like Indonesia and Malaysia and other Pacific Rim countries to join in a kind of NATO, that if China were to attack or encroach in any way on Taiwan, that they would go to war against China. Now, do you know how preposterous this is?
It sure is, big
that
time.
Not one of those countries, and certainly no one in the EU, wants to take on this feud that Biden has taken on from day one on Russia and China. He is pushing, with Blinken, the world to the absolute brink. I mean, China is watching very carefully what's going on at this G7. And if they dare to create a NATO-like force like, you know, the Ukrainians were threatening just recently before Putin pulled his troops off the border in Donbass, that they're threatening to join NATO. Well, if they're talking about creating a NATO-like Pacific Rim organization to combat Chinese aggression, then China probably will move on Taiwan. And I don't think the U.S. or any of these countries is in a position to do anything.
John, I've predicted for the last year and a half that I think China would move on Taiwan, and I'm not sure there's anything anybody's going to do about it. Who's going to go to nuke wars over that situation? We'll find out. Federal Reserve's Janet Yellen says interest rates may have to rise somewhat to keep the economy from overheating. Now, what does that all mean? Let's check in with investment advisor Chuck Koppus. Chuck, what does that mean, keep it from overheating?
Well, I think the economy is going to roaring back when it's really just money printing. You have all these proposals by Biden. She really spooked the markets today a little bit. on Wall Street. You know, right now, interest rates, they're at 5,000-year lows. You know, I've said that. And in 1980, we had a 21% on the 10-year Treasury bond. I mean, think of that, 21%. And now, in 1980, we also hit our first trillion. So really, over the last 40 years, what we've seen is the debt keeps increasing into the trillions, and the interest rates, you know, keep going down, in fact, almost negative zero. And so they just can't service this debt. That's why they keep the CPI around 2%, you know, the inflation index. So she spooked the markets. We had tech stocks down 3%. Some of this recovered, but, you know, the stock market really wants to hear easy credit. They want to hear that.
That's right.
You know, they got easy margin debt and everything. Well, she kind of backed off her predictions, but she's kind of talking like a Fed chairman. You know, she's wearing both hats here almost. And I think that we're going to see inflation. Fund managers are predicting this, price inflation. And, of course, we see it right now, George, with copper, lumber, gas, gold and silver. The Fed says that this is all transitory. It's just the velocity of money opening up business and so on. But I think it's going to get away from us because there's something even called shrinkinflation. Your listeners probably noticed that the products are weighing less. You know, they have less ounces, weight, less sheets. Some are down even 20% and stuff. So that's another form of hidden inflation that we see. You know, prices increasing, products shrinking. And, you know, as far as the interest rates, it's all central planning. And this should be determined by the free market. But we don't have that. We just have central planning, debt-based economy. I think the Fed is going to resist ever raising rates. I think they're always bluffing. They won't stop until they blow things up, stock and bond markets. And then we'll just have more, you know, more stock or more central bank intervention and so on. So, look, this is how currencies, fiat currencies fail, like I write in my book. And pretty soon, I think we're going to see silver exploding for many reasons. It's really catching a bid these days.
And the name of the book is America's Financial Reckoning Day. Chuck, thank you so much for your input. Well, we talk a lot about synchronicity on this program. Is there a science behind it, or is there something else? In a moment, Sky Nelson Isaac's back with us, his latest work, Leap to Wholeness, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Sky Nelson Isaac's back with us, was last with me a couple of years ago. Seems like a couple hours ago, just like that. Theoretical physicist, speaker, author. He's a musician. He's also a master's degree in physics from San Francisco State University with a thesis in string theory, Bachelor of Science in Physics from Berkeley, and discovering an early fascination with holograms and some of the most fundamental questions in physics. Nelson Isaacs has sought for more than two decades to establish a connection between synchronicity, physics, and the real life using research and original ideas. Sky, welcome back.
Thanks, George. Great to be here. And maybe it is like 2 years or 2 days, not sure which it is, but maybe they're equivalent in some way.
Time goes by way too fast, doesn't it? Can we slow time down?
Well, if you go really fast relative to me, we will experience different rates of time. So, yes, you can.
There are different views of time, aren't there?
Yeah, so that's time dilation that comes from special relativity, from Einstein's theory. And everybody's perspective on the world is different based upon the speed that they're traveling through space relative to each other.
And what do you think?
Clocks will take different rates.
What do you think of time?
Well, I think time, instead of thinking of time as granular, you know, we tend to think as people that time is like this present moment. We are at a fixed moment, like a point in time. We think about life that way. You know, we're at this point in time. And instead, I think we need to look at time as a line, as an extended experience. So we're looking at not only where we are now, but where we were yesterday and where we're going tomorrow. And this actually holds up in the work that I do establishing, studying quantum wave function propagation.
Your books flow together literally. One of your first books, Living in Flow, dealing with synchronicity, and we'll talk about that. The one that just came out is called Leap to Wholeness, How the World is Programmed to Help Us Grow, Heat and Adapt, Heal and Adapt, and we'll get into that too. What, in your opinion, Sky, what is synchronicity?
Synchronicity is an event that seems out of place. It might be surprising, but it might catch your attention and you wonder, you know, why is this happening to me? And it's not until later that you see how it fits into your life, that there's some kind of underlying meaning or overlying order to the situation that's happening.
I'm not a believer in coincidence. I think that things happen for reasons. How close am I to being right?
Well, I think you're right some of the time. I think that You know, we live in a world of randomness, but I think the synchronicity is like a stacking of the odds, where the more we act with a certain intention or a certain anticipation, we can anticipate the future experience we want to have. And as we do so, we stack the odds in favor of something happening in our lives that brings that experience about. And that's what we call a synchronicity.
Sky, is there a science behind this, or is this something else? Is this more metaphysical?
So my research focuses on time and space in the and developing a science of holism from the quantum mechanical formalism. And from that, I extrapolate and argue that, yes, this actually leads to the concept that we can bias the odds for certain events in favor of meaningfulness, and that's what we call synchronicity. So I try and establish a scientific rigor to it.
Now, in your book, Leap to Wholeness, which I'm holding in my hand right now, tell me what the wholeness part means.
So we live in a world where most people think of the world as reductionist, meaning everything can be broken down into parts. So you look at the molecules in your body. Your body's made of molecules, which are made of atoms, and you can separate them all from each other and identify them. And this works really well, right? It predicts all sorts of things that work really well. But it's not the only way of looking at things. If you're a graphic designer, you know that you can take a photograph, a digital photograph, and if you want to blur the whole thing at once, you can convert it into its frequencies, and you can modify its frequencies in a very specific way. If I modify the frequencies by removing all the high frequencies, then I actually blur the photograph as a whole. So there's this really accessible example of how the world behaves holistically, where there's a one-to-all relationship between a change that you make that's very specific and a change that happens on the picture all at once.
You talk about filters that affect us and limit us. What are those filters?
Well, I think, you know, what I just described in digital photography is a filter that you apply to the photograph, and
sure,
it affects the whole photograph all at once. I think people also have interact with the world according to the filters that we have inside, which are thoughts and feelings. You know, we interpret our world based upon what we already believe to be true. So if I believe that, you know, I don't like the way I look right now, and you come up and give me a compliment and you say, I like your hat, I'm going to say to myself, oh, he's just lying, or he's just trying to compliment me, but he doesn't really think that because my hat's ugly. And I'm going to not take the compliment, and I can't really hear it because I'm filtering everything through that lens. And I think conspiracy theories are kind of this way too, where we believe what we believe, it gets reinforced by what we filter, and then we believe it even stronger, and that grows over time.
You don't think that person would feel warm about the compliment of the hat? Do you think they would take it in a negative way?
It really depends on the person. See, if you have a history of some kind of pain or some kind of fear that's going to form a filter around that kind of information, then you're not going to be able to really believe the information you take in. Someone can tell you a compliment, and you're just not going to believe it because somebody in the past was disingenuous.
Mm-hmm.
So we carry past experiences forward into the future.
Some people like to surround themselves with people who are not complimentary, and then others just love it and need to feed off it from those people who are very complimentary. Why the difference?
Yeah, I think we have different experiences in the past. So some people need the reinforcement because their filters maybe are telling them that they're not really worthy, or they don't really count, and they need people to sort of keep telling them that so that they feel good. Sometimes I'm that way. And other people might feel like when that information comes in, they can't take it. Like my daughter tells me all the time, don't compliment me. I don't want to hear it. It's too stressful. I'm not sure what's going on for her inside, but there's some kind of filter that is, affecting the way that she's hearing me, that, you know, she's saying, I don't want that.
We're with theoretical physicist Sky Nelson Isaacs, and we're talking about his latest work, Leap to Wholeness. You get into grief and misplaced anger. Tell me more about that.
Well, I think that, Aristotle said very wisely that everybody can get angry. That's easy. But to get angry at the right person, for the right reason, to the right extent, and in the right manner, at the right time, that's really difficult. So I think one of the big challenges we face in the world right now, because of our filters, the way that we perceive things through our thoughts and our emotions, we tend to, you know, we might hear something at work that makes us angry. Our boss maybe says something to us that we're going to get more hours at work or something like that. But we can't express that to our boss. So we go home to our family and we express our frustration when our daughter asks us to, you know, help with homework or something like that. So the more we can identify what we're feeling and express it, whether it's, you know, grief or disappointment that we're going to have to work more hours at work or whatever it might be, and deal with it in the moment or find a way to healthfully express that to the right person, to the right target, we avoid expressing it to someone else and creating sort of a pattern for them where my daughter never wants to ask me for help again, you know?
Are these filters healthy?
Well, yeah, we're always looking at the world through filters. We can't help but look at it. You know, a filter is like our glasses, right? We see through our lenses, and that's how we see the world. What's valuable is to be able to move from one to the other. So if we feel angry about something that somebody said, and then we can gradually move, you know, maybe have a conversation with them, they apologize or they explain themselves, we have some more understanding, we move to compassion, and then maybe we move to, like, excitement for, like, what can come next. You know, so we can move through our filters. But what can happen is when we get afraid of something, some kind of fear triggers inside of us, we get stuck. We don't want to move. We can't get to the next feeling because we're stuck. We don't want to feel the one we have. We don't want to feel like somebody tells us, you know, the world's coming to an end. We might get stuck right there because we don't know how to manage that kind of intense emotion. And we get really fearful and we shut down. So the idea is to be able to keep moving through your emotions so that you don't get stuck in one place.
There's a song from Rose-Colored Glasses that talks about we're looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. That's a little bit of what you're saying.
That's exactly right, yeah. And somebody who looks at the world always positively is experiencing filters, right? It's not necessarily good or bad, but it might limit them from seeing when somebody is really hurting. Like if you're always looking at the good side, you can't necessarily see when danger's coming. So it can limit what we see and what we're able to see coming to us.
Is there a danger in being naive?
There's always a danger in... what kind of naivety do you mean exactly?
Well, just accepting everything.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons I want to develop a science for synchronicity is because I don't want to have this idea that just everything sort of... you interpret it however you want and you make meaning out of everything. I want to have some kind of understanding of how meaning shows up in the world and how we can use symbolism effectively to guide ourselves or to navigate the challenges that we face. And what I find is that the more we can effectively notice our own filters and how we are biases that interpret the world a certain way, we can actually deal with our challenges by making choices that are more aligned and more in flow and actually create change in our lives that's positive.
Where did this flow, where did this wholeness come from? Is it part of the universe? Was it developed? Was it given to us? Where did it come from?
Well, so in my work, in my research, I explore light and the propagation of light. And if you look at light traveling from the sun to the earth, according to the relativity theory that I was talking about a minute ago, there's actually no time evolution for the light itself in its own frame, if you can talk about that. But you can't really talk about the frame of light, but you can point to the fact that it doesn't actually evolve in time itself because time slows down all the way asymptotically to zero. And so you can't really think of light as traveling from place to place. And Gilbert Lewis is a physicist who talked about this and said, we're actually in virtual contact with the sun when we look at it because there's actually no separation between the beginning point and the end point of the light. So there's a sense in which light itself embodies this wholeness where you can't divide the beginning from the end or the middle. And so it's inherent, I think, in the way that the cosmos operates.
Fascinating subject, Sky. Was there anything that occurred to you personally that got you into this?
Well, I started to have, you know, I had experiences of coincidence, and at some point I started to think, you know, either this is just in my mind where I'm associating, you know, apophenia. I'm associating things that aren't really associated and creating patterns, or there's some science to it. It's one or the other, right? Or, you know, if it's some kind of divinely inspired thing, I think that can be described by science as well. So they're not exclusive of each other. So I decided to explore that and came to the conclusion after having enough experiences and documenting them that, you know, it's not reasonable to explain all the experiences with just random chance. And it would be better if we had a theory that actually showed that there's some kind of, you know, some kind of mechanism for it. And so I've tried to look at what we know about quantum mechanics and is there some way in which this holds up? And I found some connections that do seem to make some sense.
Is the book Leap to Wholeness available now to folks?
Yeah, in bookstores around the country and online at all the regular places. You can request it in your bookstore if they don't have it.
Perfect. We're going to come back in a moment with Sky Nelson Isaacs to talk more about synchronicity. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So definitely jump aboard. We will take calls with Sky next hour. and share your stories of synchronicity. And I'm going to get more into that when we come back with Sky in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial. We've got a great night ahead of you on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with theoretical physicist Sky Nelson-Isaacs, his book, Leap to Wholeness. Sky, when we deal with synchronicity, if you're thinking about somebody and the phone rings and it's them, is that just luck? Is that synchronicity? What would you call it?
I don't differentiate between synchronicity and not synchronicity, really. I think there's a spectrum of, you know, meaningfulness. How likely is this something to happen? I think we need to back away from being amazed by synchronicity and see it as a normal phenomenon that happens all the time.
Sure.
I'll give an example. My wife received a call that was from our Pacific Gas and Electric, our electric company, and she picked it up, and it was a little suspicious. So she thought maybe that someone was phishing to get her information. So she hung up the phone, and she called the electric company herself directly and waited on the phone for like 20 minutes, finally got somebody, and the person said, yeah, it's true. These people have our number. They're acting like they're us, and they're trying to get information. But while we're on the phone with you, let's just check your account. And she checked our account, and it turns out our electricity was to be shut off the next day.
Oh, my God.
Mix-up in the payments. So this spam caller actually helped us address the unknown reality that we were about to lose power.
I've talked with an expert about the phishing. That's a different topic altogether, but they really do steal other phone numbers to trick you. It's frustrating.
Yeah. And when you can see that, you know, you have your own filter, your own frustration, your own fear about that. But then you see it actually helped me solve my problem. That's when you start to really live in flow, start to see other people not as obstacles, but as, you know, clues along the path to help, you know, live your own life into the best optimal state that you can.
Well, and it happens all the time. We hear stories of people being delayed on some car trip. And all of a sudden, had they been in the car at that time, they might have been hit by a car right at that special moment where there was an accident. It could have been them. All kinds of things happen like that. But what creates it? What are we doing it as individuals? Or is there that higher power out there in the universe that's making these things happen for us?
Well, I don't think we can control the circumstances well enough to do a scientific study of each instance. And so I don't think we should, you know, decide for ourselves whether each instance is a synchronicity or not. But it forces us to be a little bit humble and say, you know, I think it's a process by which we are anticipating our circumstances, where we have a certain intention of what we want to do, and we take action in that regard. It's you know, when we have an intention and we act upon it, we start to create momentum in that direction. We'll start to experience synchronicities or meaningful moments that help us along that journey. But it doesn't mean that everything that happens is meaningful. You know, when we get sick or when we experience, like, racism or something like that, these are things that are not necessarily in our control and shouldn't be considered, like, our fault. We shouldn't take responsibility for every single thing as if it's meaningful. Some things we just have to deal with at face value.
Do you tie in intelligent design with any of this or not?
I believe in evolution theory for sure, that we've evolved through evolution. I think that there is a possibility that the process of synchronicity does influence the likelihood for well-being, right? So if a synchronicity occurs which is beneficial, and synchronicity, by the way, is a neutral process. It's not there to help us, but it's a responsive process that's responding to our choices. And if it responds in a way that helps us survive, then it does influence the course of evolution. But it's sort of an internal intelligent design. It's not intelligent design from an external creator or anything like that.
There's an ongoing argument over whether we have free will or not, or whether things are already predetermined. I think we have free will. What do you think?
I think we have free will. And this is consistent with what we know about quantum mechanics, that there is in quantum mechanics, there's a branching tree of all the possible outcomes of an experiment. And we have... When we measure the experiment, we have choice over what kind of measurement we make, and the system then gives us an answer to that experimental question. So we do have choice, and then the system collapses into one state or another randomly based on probability. But I think within the structure of the deterministic evolution of what's called the wave function, you know, that is deterministic. There's no choice involved, but the choice comes in at the point where we make a free choice over what we measure, and then the system collapses into one state or another based upon that.
It's remarkable how it works, how it happens. And can we control synchronicity, or does it just happen randomly?
Well, that's why I write about flow, because we can act in certain ways that enhance the synchronicities in our lives. We can pay attention to them. We can make note of them. I think the better listeners we are, the more we listen to people, the more we get our filters out of the way, the more we start to see, oh, yeah, my friend doesn't want to go to the movie I want to go to. So maybe I need to, like, drop my own assumption about whether I'm going to like their movie or not and go with their flow. And in doing so, I might have an experience that's really meaningful, a movie that I thought I wasn't going to like that I end up loving, or that gives me some idea about a problem I'm having at work. You know, we can get informed about one area of our life from something that happens in a totally different area of our life. So I think open-mindedness and deep listening and compassion for other people's perspectives can help us experience more synchronicity and more flow, which is not controlled by us, but we sort of surrender to that process, and it's a give and take with the cosmos.
Tell me about the holistic cosmos.
So we talked about time being a line rather than a point. And what this implies is that, you know, there's a connection between the past and the future in some sense, that there's, you can't break apart this sense of a line, like the light traveling from the sun to the earth exists as a whole. What that means is, you know, I think about this like a virtual world. In a virtual world, you have systems, you know, have non-player characters, right? You have NPCs, like in The Matrix, you have all the agents that are out to kill Neo. And they don't have an actual history, right? They're just bits in the machine. So when you make a choice to go one way versus to go the other way, the bits in the machine can jostle and change to make the NPCs go a different direction. So history is flexible in a video game or in a virtual world. And I think that is possibly the way our physical world works. History is flexible of things that we haven't observed, and that allows for the physical world to adjust to our choices and to become responsive in this way.
Sky, are we real? Because others have talked about a virtual reality world too. I mean, is this really happening to us, or are we created like that?
Yeah, I think it's really important to see that the world is real. You know, we have real problems. We have systemic racism in the world. We have conspiracy theories that are miscommunication that's happening. We have people suffering around the globe in different ways. That's all real stuff that we got to deal with. But it doesn't mean that we understand completely what objective reality is. I use the word virtual-like reality because it's got this element of flexible histories where the world can respond to us and adapt to us, but it is still a real world where we have real consequences.
But you talk about the cosmos being programmed. So what do you mean by that?
I mean that synchronicity is the programming, that when we make a choice to go out and, you know, get a job, and we start to fill out a resume and we start to inquire with other people about job opportunities, that the response of this of the world around us is to bring us some of those opportunities, to start showing us, like, here's a person that comes across your path at the grocery store that has an idea for you or has a job opening for you. But if we do it differently, if we don't have the confidence to, you know, to approach that person, for instance, we'll have a different experience. And so the programming is like based on what we choose to do, based on whether we choose to have the confidence to proceed or we don't. The synchronicity will occur differently and either happen or not happen. And this is sort of a way that the universe is programmed to help us heal, help us grow, and really be a reflection of who we are that we can learn from.
You have high praise from the book from a lot of people. And what would you say is the most important aspect of Leap to Wholeness?
I think that, you know, we're dealing with some really big issues in the world, and I mentioned a couple of them. I think climate change is a really fundamental issue we have to deal with. I think systemic racism is a big issue. I think misinformation and the way that we communicate across the political barrier is important. And all of these things, I think, come down to a sense, ultimately, of people and how they relate to each other. And this is really based on our filters, based on our own past experiences, what information we've taken to believe and what information we don't believe. And those filters are thoughts and emotions in our own heads that influence what we see and what we hear and what we make of the information we get. So you and I can listen to the same information from a politician and maybe hear it differently based upon what our preconceived biases are.
Sure.
That's a really important thing to know so that we don't get too serious when we disagree with somebody, because we might find that our disagreements are at the surface, and that underneath that there's a real commonality that we share.
Can we use synchronicity to our advantage?
Yeah, we can. Every time we successfully move towards some goal, we are implementing these tools, because I think everyone has experiences where they can say, you know, I decided I was going to get a job, or I decided I was going to start a business, or I decided I was going to meet somebody romantically. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, I ran into this person that led me in the right direction. So when we have clarity on our goals and we act upon them, we are implementing the same phenomenon that I think brings synchronicity around, this expectation that we set. So I think it's calling us to become more confident, but also more receptive at the same time. We're not just barreling over people, but actually listening to our life, listening to other people, and listening to the things that happen to us.
How important is intuitiveness to this kind of mix? I mean, is that part of synchronicity, or is that outside of it?
I don't think a person has to consider themselves intuitive. I think that intuition can play a big role if you can notice, you know, the things happening to you, not just at the surface, but how you feel about a situation, or, you know, what somebody might mean. If somebody tells you they're happy, but you kind of sense that they're not happy with the decision, you know, that's a good clue to help. It's just one of the pieces of the puzzle that you can weave together to say, what do I really need to do here? If my whole team at work is not really happy with the decision, but they're telling me they're happy, you know, maybe that's a clue that I need to reconsider the direction we're going.
Is it synchronicity, or is it just gut intelligence to make a decision, let's say a financial decision, and you made the right move? You know, maybe you decided, I'm not going to buy Bitcoin this week, and it plummets. Is that just having some financial knowledge, or is there some synchronicity tied to that?
I think that there's a relationship that gets established when you start living in flow. It's not that the future is predicted. You know, the future is unknown. We have free will. And what I'm suggesting is the circumstances outside of us adapt to the choices we make. So it's not clear in advance whether the stock will go up or down. I think, you know, in my experience, what I'm led to is focusing more on the inner things that I'm learning, like, why am I attached to the stock going up or down? What is the feeling that that generates in me? What is, you know, the fearful attachment I might have to one outcome or another? And the more I can let go of the fearful attachments, the more I can get into flow with what I'm doing and be more successful at whatever it is.
What can go wrong with synchronicity, Sky?
Well, I think that we can get kind of overly obsessed with trying to analyze synchronicity in our lives. And I think backing away from the analysis, what I'm trying to point to with the focus on holism is a whole different part of who we are, not just the analytical selves, but the heartfelt, you know, what do we feel? What does our gut tell us?
Right.
Integrative awareness of, you know, everything that people are thinking and feeling in a group, and not just our own perspective. So I think what can go wrong is sort of an over-focus on what you think the meaning is without really feeling into what the broader underlying experience is.
I mean, I keep wondering if we're the ones that make synchronicity happen, that we do it because of our own innate abilities.
Well, again, I think that we are the first move and the cosmos makes the second move. So we make a choice to go in a certain direction, to start looking for a job. And the cosmos sort of says to us in some, you know, way, like, okay, that's what you're doing. Well, here's the first step. I'm going to, you know, give you a link that helps you find a resume template, you know, and you find that link and then you fill that out. And so it's this back and forth. It's not just sort of a divine doing it for us, and it's not just us doing it from scratch. But this is the idea of wholeness, that all the possibilities exist. And what we're doing is really carving away from those possibilities, not creating from scratch ourselves. So it's a collaboration between us and the cosmos itself.
Is wholeness like prayer? Could you say that they're one and the same?
I think somebody could see it that way. Wholeness is a view of the world that is not broken up into pieces, in which we are all sort of part of the same thing. And if you look at that example of the photograph, which you decompose into the frequency domain, into its spectrum, there's a connection between each point in the spectrum and each point in all of the photograph. In the same way, you know, my work is trying to show that the Fourier transform, which is the mathematics there, applies to space and time, both space and time. And from that, you get a representation of the world, which is doesn't have these spatial and temporal variables anymore. And when you have a world that doesn't have spatial and temporal variables anymore, you're dealing with a timelessness and spacelessness, and the whole notion of being separate from each other sort of vanishes. It's hard to understand what that means, but mathematically, it's there. So,
all right, Scott, we're going to take a break. We'll come back at the top of the hour. Our final hour to go. Phone calls with you next.